Hello again, and welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, episode 217. This is the weekly podcast about American flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community as we discuss the vital topics of saving our domestic flower farms and supporting a floral industry that relies on a safe, seasonal, and local supply of flowers and foliage. This podcast is brought to you by slowflowers.com, the free nationwide online directory to florists, shops, and studios who design with American-grown flowers, and to the farms that grow those blooms. It's the conscious choice for buying and sending flowers. And a special thanks to our lead sponsor for 2015, the California Cut Flower Commission, committed to making a difference as an advocate for American-grown flowers. Learn more at ccfc.org. I've had today's guest on my wish list for a couple of years, and due to both of our travel schedules, it has taken nearly 2 years for us to connect in the same time and place with a quiet moment to record today's interview. Our paths finally crossed when Francoise Weeks and I were both in Detroit at the same time for the Flower House festivities. Francoise had traveled to Detroit earlier in the week to teach a two-day workshop hosted by our second podcast guest today, Susan McCleary of Passion Flower Events. And I was in town to co-host the final Field to Vase dinner of 2015. The Flower House, subject of last week's podcast, prompted Susan to ask Francoise to collaborate with her on the first floor kitchen called Fruits of Labor. The three of us sat down for this recording on the morning after the hugely successful Field to Vase dinner. They were staying in a restored loft apartment in a historic Detroit neighborhood and suggested I come over to record the interview. When I arrived, Susan and Francoise were concentrating on assembling a bridal bouquet, boutonniere, and floral crown for a last-minute elopement that was to occur at the Flower House the following day. It was a lovely moment to talk with both of them as Francoise and Susan's hands shaped and formed tiny botanical elements into the most delicate textural creations. Francoise hails from Belgium, and you can hear the gentle traces of her Flemish accent when she speaks. She has been living in Portland for many years, which is where she developed her studio design business, created flowers for hundreds of weddings, and shaped her distinct brand of European-inspired floral design. Francoise and I have known one another for several years as residents of neighboring states. In fact, I first met her in 2010 while on a scouting trip to Portland for the 50 Mile Bouquet. Since that time, it has been so inspiring to watch Francoise's career explode as an in-demand floral educator whose workshop series and classes are often sold out with waiting lists. Here's a little more about Francoise. Francoise was born in Belgium in an area romanticized by the flower arrangements of the Dutch and Flemish painters of the 17th and 18th centuries. Honing her talents through training with the florists of Antwerp, Francoise discovered her signature, a unique, lush, and textural style, heavily imprinted by her love of nature and art. Since 1996, she has translated her passion into creations of flowers, herbs, fruits, vegetables, and foliage in a way that the masters could only paint. Her portfolio runs the gamut from elegant natural simplicity to the abundant and bountiful. She consistently delivers the unexpected. Francoise's first priority is to realize the ideas and needs of her clients and bring to the process her attention to detail and unique creativity. Recently, her work has emerged into two distinctive styles: urban woodlands, contemporary stylings of mosses, lichens, bark, and forest floor gatherings, and floral forward, exquisite botanical haute couture creations of purses, headpieces, and shoes. Francoise shares her knowledge of floral design and mechanics with professionals and students from around the world in intimate studio classes and workshop settings. Francoise has been the subject of numerous magazine articles throughout the U.S. and Europe. My conversation with Francoise naturally transitioned toward Susan McCleary, once her student, now a good friend and fellow floral educator. Susan and I met in 2014 when I spoke to the chapel designers in New York City at the invitation of Holly Chapel. She later joined the slowflowers.com website, as has Francoise, which is fitting because both designers are known for working with local and seasonal blooms as a preference. I've recently been able to spend more time with Susan, as she was the featured designer for the Field to Vase dinner tour at the Flower House. I credit Susan for nudging me to schedule this interview with Francoise. Susan couldn't avoid me asking her to be part of the episode, though. Here's a little bit more about Susan McCleary. Like most of the florists in our Slow Flowers community, Susan is such a collaborative individual as an artist, designer, and educator. Based in Ann Arbor, Michigan, she is known for her unusual, boundary-pushing floral art, including elaborate headpieces, flower crowns, and her signature succulent jewelry. Her soulful, seasonally inspired creations and floral wearables have been described as exquisite living artwork. Susan has trained with some of the country's leading floral designers, including Francoise Weeks, Holly Chapel, and Erin Benzikane of Floret. Yet, she has developed her own distinct style of floral design. Considered one of the country's top designers of floral wearables and living jewelry, Susan received 1 gold and 3 silver medals and placed 2nd overall in the 2014 Fusion Flowers International Designer of the Year competition. Her studio, Passion Flower, was the only finalist in the floral category of Martha Stewart's 2015 American Made contest. A passionate teacher, Susan offers private design instruction for new and professional florists in her studio and throughout destination workshops. Her teaching experience also includes a sold-out 2-day workshop on living jewelry design held in Scotland. Numerous other creative collaborations and workshops are planned for the coming year. You'll hear them talking about that. Susan's work has been featured on the cover of Fusion Flowers magazine and in leading industry publications and websites, including Modern Wedding Flowers, Style Me Pretty, and The Knot. Susan is a member of Chapel Designers, Slow Flowers, and Style Me Pretty's Little Black Book. A frequent featured designer on Etsy, her designs and her living jewelry have been praised for their originality, sustainability, and style. First, you'll hear from Francoise, and then we'll pivot to Susan McCleary. Please visit DeborahPrinzing.com to meet these two women, see images of them and their work, and to follow links to all their social places. I don't even know how to describe where I am. Good morning, everyone. I'm in a loft apartment in Detroit with two amazing talents, Francoise Weeks, and Francoise is from Portland. Hi, Francoise.
Hi, Deborah. How are you today?
I'm great. And Francoise is here because she's been teaching two different groups of students in Michigan. And she's here because our other guest, Susan McCleary of Passion Flower in Ann Arbor, lured her here, I think. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Tell me how that happened. You have done this twice, right?
I have. I'm a past student of Francoise and longtime admirer. And when I heard she was traveling to teach workshops, I knew I wanted to host her and share her wonderful talent with my friends in Michigan. So this is the second time I've hosted her, and I plan to host her again next year.
Oh, that's wonderful. I think that I think that is a far cry from when I first met Francoise, and I'm going to jump back to that just to give a little context, because I was working on the 50 Mile Bouquet with Dave Perry, and we were just it was December of 2010, and we were just like on this junket to Portland to go visit the Portland Flower Market and just see what was going on down there. And Sandra Lobenthal of Peter Court Roses said, you've got to go meet Francoise. And I think we, like, called you and said, can we come over? And, like, an hour later, we were at your studio.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Was that how it went?
Well, I think I ran into you both at the flower market, and I had a big wedding that weekend, and so I couldn't linger because you had some other things to take care of.
Oh, we had other appointments,
and then
yeah.
you came by the studio later that day, I think.
It was dark. It was late.
Yeah.
And you live in a cozy little neighborhood in Portland, in a bungalow type of neighborhood, and I grew up in that kind of neighborhood in Portland, so I love it. I don't even remember what neighborhood that is.
It's the Richmond neighborhood,
okay.
Inner Southeast.
Oh, okay. I was in Laurelhurst off of 39th and Hazelfern when I was in high school, so not too far from you.
No, that is not too far.
Yeah, and the biggest surprise to me was going behind your house and seeing the amazing facility. Your little secret studio that is in a, was it a formerly a garage?
There used to be a garage there, and we had it torn down. I started my business in the basement, and when I ran out of space, we had the studio built, because I basically had the choice to either do that or work off-site, and I was used to working out of the house, and I
absolutely
really liked that.
Oh. So I thought you were going to say you had a choice between that or opening a retail shop.
Oh, no, absolutely never.
If she could do a big cross in the air, she would.
No.
Well, Françoise, your journey has been so fun to watch, and I only have known you for, 6 years. So please back us up a little bit and tell us how your floral design business evolved. And when did you actually, did you do other things before you got into floristry?
Yes, I'm a teacher by trade. I went to college to be a middle school teacher. And that didn't last very long. Teaching flowers to adults is way more fun than
I love it.
Teaching science to 12 and 13-year-olds.
But you were a science teacher, though.
Yeah.
Did you have a background in botany? Or?
It was math, physics, and chemistry.
Okay.
And then I moved to the United States in 77 with the intent of working with flowers, but at that time, the selection of flowers was extremely limited. So I put that on the back burner, and I kind of fell into a job working in a clinical cytogenetics lab at a hospital, and I did that for about 20 years. And then,
while your creative soul was screaming to jump out, right?
So I really got into gardening, and I used to always have flowers in the house and always make flowers, flower arrangements for friends and stuff like that. And then starting a business was actually very daunting. And but then at one point in 96, there was talk that the lab where I worked might close. It never happened, but they were talking about it. And because our work was so specialized, I was wondering, well, where am I? What am I going to do? And
right.
That's literally what pushed me or gave me the courage to start my business.
Well, that's cool because you'd probably subconsciously been planning the business in your head for a long time, right? Like if I were to get out of this, I'm sure you were really good at what you did. You had to have been for 20 years.
It was a good job, but it was a job.
Yeah.
And this is...
This is a
very different.
This is in your DNA.
Yeah, I like that.
Well,
cytogenetics DNA.
There you go. Yeah. Okay. We'll run with it. So I want to just back up one quick second and ask about. So you thought you would do floral, and the limited selection was uninspiring. Was that in the late 70s? Was that when there was just like kind of a very narrow floral palette of options, like, you know...
What I remember was Mums, Red Roses, Baby's Breath, and Glads.
Yeah.
That probably was a little bit more, but not much.
Right.
And so in Belgium, where I grew up, you went... Number one, there were a ton of flower shops, almost as many flower shops as there were bakeries, and there are a lot of bakeries in Belgium. And you'd go to a flower shop, and the selection was just absolutely incredible. Even if they were small shops, like in tulip season, you'd have like 10 buckets or vases. They didn't use buckets in the shops. Big vases with like 10 different varieties, 10 vases, each one with one variety of tulips. So it
just
was like
on the corner shop.
Right.
I remember when I went to Belgium and to visit a friend, an American friend who moved to Antwerp. And
That's where I'm from.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I can picture where you're from then. I can picture those glass-fronted, divided windows, kind of greenhouse-looking shops. And every single one of them was exquisitely displayed, potted plants, little boxwood balls. Mm-hmm. There's nothing messy. Mm-hmm. They were like jewelry stores. Mm-hmm. And to go off on another tangent, that to me... is the difference between the European floral consumer and the U.S. floral consumer. Is that still the case?
The thing that really, really struck me, too, when I would see flower shops in Portland was that there was a cooler. Number one, I'd never seen a flower cooler.
Really?
Because they didn't have... Maybe they do now, but they certainly didn't have them at the time.
Is that because they were maybe getting daily deliveries or something?
Probably. Okay. And they moved the flowers so much faster.
You didn't have to keep them
frozen. A lot of people buy flowers there for their homes.
Yeah.
Not just because there is an event. And so you'd go to a flower shop, and they would sell flowers. Flowers and containers. And
not Mylar balloons and all that other crap.
And then I moved here, and it's like there would be a cooler in the back and with flowers in the cooler and maybe a few containers in the shop. But then the shop had a lot of stuff.
Yeah, gifts,
you know,
and
gifts and
jewelry,
you
yeah.
know, and snacks.
Non-flower.
Non-flower. And that was like a major, major, major difference. And slowly but surely, it changed. And it's really quite delightful what
yes.
has happened now. What's really interesting is when I started my business, I knew I didn't want to have a shop.
Right.
I knew I wanted to design, and I knew I didn't want to manage people, mm-hmm. and I knew I didn't want to have employees. But at the time, Joe, who owned Billingsley Wholesaler,
sure.
He told me that I was one of the few who worked out of my home.
Mm.
Most people had a shop. And about 4 years ago or so, he said, you know, the trend totally changed. And now in Portland, there are way more people who work out of their home or a studio or a warehouse than people who own a shop.
Right.
So the trend totally changed.
It has. And I've heard these derogatory terms like basement Bettys, referring to people like you in your basement,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
as if you're sort of self-taught and non-professional.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it kind of amusing that you are the person that is setting the styles that the, you know, so-called, mainstream florists
mm-hmm.
are now trying to scramble to catch up with, you know, the design fashion aesthetic that's coming out of the independent studio
mm-hmm.
florists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, okay, that's really helpful to picture. So when you did leave, when you did make the leap and start, decided to start your own floral business, is that, how did you have, that's when you really had the European aesthetic that you were trying to bring to the Northwest, or?
Well, it's kind of funny because, quite frankly, I fell flat on my face because I had this illusion that if I told all my friends that I started a business, that that people would order flowers for me. Because I still was in the total mindset, European mindset, because that's how it works.
That's how you grew up.
Yeah, that's how
right.
I grew up. And it certainly didn't happen that way. And I kind of really panicked about it because I realized how I wasn't going anywhere.
But you had to make a living.
I was still working part-time
okay.
at the lab.
Okay, that's a cool bridge then.
I was introduced to the brother of a friend of mine who knew nothing about flowers, but who knew a lot about marketing.
Mm.
And he is the one who told me, you know, you really need to focus on one particular thing. He said,
mm-hmm.
I don't care if you focus on weddings or on event flowers or on funerals, but that's what you have to do. Choose one and then put all your marketing energy into that. And I chose weddings.
That was a good advice yeah. then.
I chose weddings. I did a lot of cold calling, which I certainly didn't enjoy doing.
Oh, Francois, we know what an extrovert you are.
Yeah, I thought it was going to kill me. Shannon gave me homework, you know, okay, I'm going to call you a week from now. You're going to report to me how many people you called and what the result was.
Who were you calling? Like venues?
In Portland, there is this guide. It's called the Bravo Guide.
Mm-hmm.
And there's hundreds of vendors advertise, have like a whole page or half a page in that book that...
In the wedding industry
that showcases what they're going to do. So I basically flipped through it. I did it for weeks and weeks.
Francois.
And I cold called dozens and dozens of people and basically said, you know, I just started my business. Would you have the time to meet for coffee so we can exchange business cards and I can show you my little portfolio, which was this tiny little thing.
Like what? Like a little 3x5?
Yeah, exactly.
Photo album.
4x6 photos. Yeah, that's exactly what it was. You know, in plastic sleeves.
Oh, yeah. Like some people put their grandchildren's photos
yeah, exactly,
in.
Exactly.
And you had your flowers
exactly,
in.
That's exactly what it was. Well, those people became my first referral base.
Wow.
So I always would make a little bouquet and give them a little bouquet and business cards, a business card, and show pictures. And
Neat. And were they people like caterers and...
photographers,
okay.
Wedding coordinators.
Great,
so
brilliant.
People. And they became my first referral base.
And your little bouquet was your calling card.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And no one else was probably doing that. I love that.
Yeah.
I know there's the term the tussie mussy. Was that what it was like?
Yeah, that's basically what they were.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
So you really, I think when I met you, that was sort of where your world was. You were doing quite a bit of weddings. Also, you had added corporate events, right?
I never did many corporate events. I tried, but I never really got my foot in the door there.
And when the only reason I say that is I think when I met you, you were actually doing centerpieces for some like auction or something.
Oh, yeah. That's,
but that wasn't a big part of your business.
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
And then in 2003, my sister really encouraged me to teach classes in the studio. And she had to really, really twist my arm because I've always worked by myself. I don't like people watching.
Right.
What I do.
Wow.
The idea of demoing was like, no, this is never going to happen.
Well, but did you have your studio by then?
I had my studio.
Okay, so you had a place to have the classes.
Yeah, I had a place, and my sister said, you know, you're really good at it, because she had helped me for a wedding, and I had explained to her what I, you know.
Yeah, you had to give her a crash course.
And she said, you know, you did a great job explaining what I needed to do, and you really should teach. And it took her quite a while to convince me. And then I still didn't believe her. And then I polled a bunch of my friends. My sister tells me that. Do you think I should do this?
Yeah.
And well, everybody said, you really should. So I started teaching evening classes, maybe once a month or something like that.
And were your customers primarily other designers, or were they just flower enthusiasts?
There were a few designers, but mostly flower enthusiasts. And it's like everything else. So I was super nervous. The first time, I will never forget this, there were eight people in the class, and they were all friends of mine. Mm. And they said, we're going to support you, and we're going to come and come to your classes. And I had all these little containers on the bench and flowers, and I kind of knew what I wanted to show them, but never having taught a flower class, you know, or never having attended one, I wasn't quite sure.
You never attended one?
No. So,
but you knew those middle school science students. You know how to teach.
So I had attended a class a long time, you know, in the mid-90s or something like that, and that was about it. So I told, they were friends, so I told them, I'm super nervous about doing this. Mm-hmm. And they said, you'll do fine.
Oh.
And about 10 minutes into the class, this lady, Barbara, said to me, I have a question for you. She said, if I go to Safeway and buy a bunch of flowers, what do I do with it besides plunking it in a vase? And that was the question that I needed to hear. I said,
wow.
Oh, let me show you.
Oh, wow.
And then I took, you know, whatever I had there and said, and you could do this and you could do this. And this is an example. And that kind of took the fear out of me.
Yeah, because you were helping her.
And it was easy to give those ideas.
Right, you know? Right.
So
that was like over 10 years ago that you started teaching.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then in 2008, somebody at the flower market who worked there asked me if I would consider teaching wedding workshops. And I thought about it, and I was 55 at the time, and I thought, if by the time I'm 60, if I could have the teaching be my main source of income, that really would be fantastic.
Right, because it's a physically demanding job to do weddings,
super.
Isn't it?
It's incredible and very stressful and very physically demanding. So I hired my web designer to add it onto my website.
Yep.
He did a brochure, et cetera, et cetera. And then I kind of, again, fell flat on my face because I didn't really know how to market this.
This is when you were primarily doing, like, day-long or half-day workshops in your Portland studio. You weren't traveling yet, right?
No, I wasn't traveling. So I was doing three-day wedding workshops.
Okay.
And I did that for several years. The weddings always remained the main source of income. So I felt like I was not achieving the goal that
I had set. What you were moving
set.
Toward, yeah.
And what was very interesting is, so it was somebody at the flower market who encouraged me to teach, to share information, and only 5% of the students are from Portland.
Right.
And I think we had a conversation once, you and I, about how interesting it is that people from your own city are not apt to attend workshops or presentations from local people.
Susan and I were talking about that yesterday because when we tried to have something with you at the Seattle Wholesale Growers mm-hmm. Market, and it was even being discounted.
I remember that.
We couldn't get any traction, and all I could conclude is that there was a core group of Françoise Weeks fans mm-hmm. in Seattle, but most of them had already come down to Portland to study with you.
Several people from Seattle have come. And so for 2 years, I was getting really frustrated because it wasn't taking off the way I had hoped to. And for 2 years, people told me, you have to take them on the road. You really have to take them on the road because that's going to make all the difference in the world. And it was such a very, very scary proposition. It seemed so complicated. It was like, you know...
Oh, there's so many logistics involved, right?
The logistics involved are huge. It's like, who would host? Where would I teach? How would I get the materials there? I don't drive in other cities besides Portland. how would I, you know, I of course can take a cab, but if you have to buy flowers, I mean, there were so many logistics. And then after 2 years of hearing it just one too many times, my sister, I was talking to my sister, and she said, why don't you try it just once?
This is the same sister. Oh, well, she's a good ally.
My good big sister. And she said, just... try it once, and if you don't like it, you never have to do it again.
Yeah.
And Lori, who lives in Seattle, LA, she had come to a workshop 2 years prior.
Oh, Lori Freistack?
From So Lori had taken a workshop, had come to Portland to take the wedding workshop. And she told me that she was so inspired after, which is so lovely to hear.
Right.
That when she went back home, they hired somebody to transform a garage into a studio, and she documented the whole process in her blog. So it was very fun, you know.
Oh,
to see
I remember
the
progress. That. Yeah.
And when it was done, she said, you know, I would love for you to come and teach here. And for a year, I said no. It was this whole block in the fear was totally winning.
Yes.
I'll put it that way. Yes. It often happens. When I finally decided, maybe I should try this, I contacted her and I said, is your offer still there? And she said, yes. So I told her, you know, I won't drive. Can you come and pick me up? Can you take me to the flower market? I was able to stay at her house. And so all these big problems that I always was looking at for that first time, they weren't there because she was facilitating it that way.
Which is kind of what Susan's doing for you,
right? Exactly. Yeah. So I kind of, she has a small studio like mine, and so we had 5 people, and it really was such a good experience. And I thought, I can do this.
When was that?
This was in March of 2013.
It was only March of 2013. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. You've become a world traveler since then. Oh my gosh. That is so cool.
And so and then in the meantime, a couple of people had contacted me, and I had said, sure, I'll do that. And then by the second or the third time that I was traveling, I came up with kind of a silly little thing to do, but it has helped me tremendously. So on my way to the airport, on Facebook, I just would say, off to the airport, so excited to go teach at blah, blah. And then on the way back, I would say, Homeward Bound, had a fantastic experience teaching in Detroit or whatever.
Right.
And what started to happen is that every time that I did that, one or two or three people would private message me and say, what do I have to do to host a workshop?
Wow.
And this is how, and I work social media very hard.
I was just going to say, the thing that I observe about you is as, you know, solitary of a human being as you are, mm-hmm. in that you like your privacy and your quiet time, mm-hmm. you are engaged with so many friends, virtual mm-hmm. friends, mm-hmm. And your posts are really always giving something to the floral community, like a beautiful plant photo or some amazing variety that no one has found. And I don't know how you do it. How is it mainly Facebook, or do you? Do you divide all that up?
So the beautiful flowers and the most unusual flowers, they are reposts on Facebook.
You just find them on the internet.
I started to follow some people on Facebook. That's all they do. They post these most incredible flower pictures. Most of the time, I've never ever seen those trees or shrubs.
Right.
Or
flowers. They're all over the world, right?
Stunning. They're from all over. And so I repost them and... So I post those. I post images of the work of students, and I post images of my work.
Okay.
And that's basically what I do. And then Elizabeth Bryant in Portland, she worked very hard on me to get on Instagram. Took her like
good
eight,
girl, Elizabeth.
Or something
past
like that.
Podcast guest.
Yes, she is. She worked really hard at convincing me. You know, Françoise really would be an amazing marketing tool. And I, it was like, I don't want to learn one more thing,
exactly,
etc. And then, as it turns out, it has become my best marketing tool.
Yes. I think our industry, floral in general, is more Instagram-friendly than Facebook-friendly, right? Mm-hmm. Is that for you too, Susan?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah.
And but, like, so rapidly.
So rapidly.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That's great, Françoise. So now when someone's private messages you mm-hmm. and says, what do I have to do to have a workshop, do you have kind of a page on your website with all the details that you just send them to?
Yeah, and then I also created a Word document two mm-hmm. years ago, and I just send the Word document, you know, that includes I don't drive.
And the money, and all the money part,
So all that stuff. And...
That's great.
Yeah, and it just took off. And I can tell you, never in a million years did I ever, ever think that when I was in my 60s, I would start to travel all over.
Right.
And it has been, I can't even begin to tell you what a joy it is to share the information with so many people from all over the world.
Oh, I'm just delighted to hear that. And I just want to, I don't know if, you know, when I interview florists, a lot of times I'll be like, now how many weddings do you do every year? I think I asked you that, Susan. But since March of 13, when you got on that plane and flew to LA, do you know roughly how many cities you've gone to or how many students you've taught?
The first year I traveled 6 times. Last year I traveled 14 times. This year I traveled, I think, 15 times. And for next year, I already have 14 on the books.
Oh, my gosh.
So it just has snowballed in a way that I never, ever, ever, ever imagined.
And when you teach, what are your curriculum offerings? What do people choose from on the menu?
Most of the time, they ask me to teach woodlands and a botanical couture. Sometimes, like what we did here in Detroit, I use the botanical couture, but the focus is weddings.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a variety of wedding bouquets, and then I always like to let people know, you know, besides doing a hand-tied bouquet for the bridesmaids or for the flower girls, how about doing a flower purse, or instead of doing... a pin on corsage, how about doing botanical jewelry? You know, you can do a ring, you can do a necklace, you can do earrings. I mean, they're just something different and something that's just out of the box and a lot more fun than a pin on corsage that's going to be crushed because people give so many hugs.
Well, you're broadening the design palette for your students mm-hmm. and making them think in a different way about that.
And another thing that I always, always bring up is for people to look at plant materials through different eyes. So instead of, as a silly example, you know, you have a delphinium. Yes, you can put it in a tall vase, but you know what? You can also cut it up in small pieces to use in centerpieces. You can use the individual blossoms for flower crowns, for corsages and boutonnieres, for jewelry, etc. And so you can use, if you cut the stem, you don't have to pitch the bottom of the stem with the foliage. You can use the foliage in centerpieces or in garlands or whatever. So it's really about using, maximizing the plant material that you have, and by using these little bits and pieces, bringing in different texture than the traditional texture.
That's what I your textures and your I don't know, almost like you're almost like a fiber artist. You're weaving some of these pieces.
I'm a weaver.
You are a weaver.
I am a weaver.
No way.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Well then that kind of brings it all full circle. Oh yeah. My gosh. Well, it does. Yeah. Do you feel like you're weaving sometimes?
Mm-hmm. And I had to quit weaving when I started my business because that's another all time consuming endeavor. But it's again all about detail and all about patience.
Right.
And I love small and I love detail. And it makes things last take a much, much longer to make, you know, versus using larger blooms and stuff. And it's just a different style.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I'm very interested in also is to figure out a way on how to teach at flower farms. And Susan and I were talking about it. That's what we're going to do next year. So
oh,
I'm super excited about that.
Oh, good. Should we bounce over to Susan?
Yes.
She's like,
yes.
I have some more questions for you, Françoise, but since we're going to make this a one-hour podcast, okay. I think, we'll just, that way we can not have to make people wait to hear from Susan. Look at, this is like a typical example of what I'm looking at now, what Françoise was describing. You've got amaranth, which is 12 feet tall, I'm exaggerating,
yeah.
5 feet tall. And Susan, you're just taking one little tiny spray of it, stripping down the, I don't know what you call that, little blossom, and you're stripping off a little bit of foliage. And now you've got this tiny cluster of, I don't know, jewelry that's 3 inches long. Is that's kind of what Françoise was just talking about taking the bits, right?
That's right. Mm. Yes. And she really taught me to look at plants in a new way. So I'm really happy that I took
your
class.
You're having fun. Susan and Françoise have been making an amazing floral crown here. Maybe you'll let me take a picture of it to share. It's so pretty.
Certainly.
Do you want to talk about your international, like going to China? Mm-hmm. Have you gone anywhere else besides China?
This year was pretty cool. I went to Mexico City in February.
Oh, that's right.
Taught 2 workshops in England in May.
Oh, that's right.
And then went to China in September.
You're getting a lot of miles, aren't you?
Yes, hey, I'm graduated to gold with United next year. So excited about that.
Oh, you're going to get that free glass of wine now.
And when I travel internationally, my friend Jo Jarvis, who is a designer, she lives in Pennsylvania. She's British. So she has this wonderful European flair. I just love her.
Just like your flair.
Because traveling, I'm totally comfortable traveling within the U.S. by myself, but going to countries where I don't know the language and there are just so many loose ends.
Yeah.
I'm not all that comfortable traveling by myself. So it has been wonderful to do that. And she has been, when she was in Europe, she owned a very successful flower business in London. And she was always interested in education. And she organized a lot of international workshops when she was there. So she was, I met her because she invited me to come and teach a woodland workshop in Pennsylvania exactly two years ago. And we became very good friends, and she has been a wonderful mentor for me and extremely helpful to figure out this whole workshop system.
Sure, it's a part of your business now.
It's business.
Yeah, and you're right. It's really fun to travel, and it's really fun to teach workshops, but you can't be breaking even. This is your profession.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's, so I went from doing about 50 to 60 weddings a year. The year I started to travel, I did 25. Last year I did 9, and this year I did 2.
Wow.
So the business really has become about teaching.
Françoise, yeah. It happened.
It did happen. It was a few years later.
But it happened because you pushed through that. Mm-hmm. Fear and that whatever those hurdles were, you got over them, and that's really inspiring. Mm-hmm. And you talk about that with your students?
Yes, I talk about that often because fear paralyzes all of us,
yeah.
And it certainly has paralyzed me many, many times. And so I came up early in my business, I came up with this little mantra, and I've had it, I've mentioned it so many times. I've shared it so many times, and it is, when the desire to succeed becomes greater than the fear to fail, I move forward.
Yeah.
And I've had to do that, whether it was with cold calling or, you know, making steps of taking on larger events, or but mainly with the traveling.
Yeah.
And or once when I got invited to teach in front of, you know, not eight people in the class, but doing a presentation or a lecture, the fear is... it's definitely there.
Right.
And like my sister told me after the first time that I did that, she said, well, it worked because you talked through your flower voice. And it was just the nicest thing she has ever said to me.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I was just amazed that I had been able to talk and to demo in front of a very large group of people, even though I was so fear-filled. You know,
right
before I came on stage.
But it's interesting because that flower voice example, the first one you gave when you taught your friends and they ask you about the grocery store bouquets, that, do you think that's when your flower voice got excited?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so it's like Monique said, you know, you you know what you made, so you can answer the questions about what are the mechanics or whatever. And she said, you love what you do, you're very passionate about it, and you combine those two things. And she said, it really allows people to share in front of groups of people. And so anytime that I have to talk in front of a larger group of people, I remember that, okay, turn on your flower voice.
Well, the other thing I want to ask you about, well, first of all, on the podcast show notes, well, let's share, I'll share all the links for anybody who doesn't know who you are, how to find you. And for those who have been thinking about tracking you down and taking a workshop, you'll have your whole calendar of upcoming workshops that we can share. Okay.
Right.
When I first met you, you had... been working with a photographer and taking photos thinking you might do a book, and I'm assuming you kind of back-burnered that for a while.
Right. So, what's the publisher in Portland?
Oh, Timber.
Timber Press.
Yeah.
So we submitted a Timber Press, and our contact person really liked the project. Actually, the whole Woodland concept was born from doing... while I was doing that project.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
And so it's... So I'm very, very grateful that doing that book that was never published was the conduit to start a whole new part of my business.
Because that kind of developed your aesthetic.
Right.
For that particular niche.
Yeah, exactly. But so this was in 2008, and our contact person ended up presenting, after doing four revisions, the book to the board, and they ultimately said, we don't want to do it.
Because that was when the book bottom of the book market fell out.
Yeah.
I totally get that, and it's tragic.
And so I the way I choose to look at it is that Joni had taken so many fantastic images. The book, in a way... has been published in my mind, because I've used so many of these images, you know, on my website, on social media, in some publications, etc.
And your note cards, you published beautiful note cards.
The note cards. So I...
That's true.
Yeah. It's so the word did go out.
Do you think that you would revive that, or if you were to be approached to do a book, would you just do a whole different approach now?
Yeah. You know, so many people have told me that I should do a book. I kind of had a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth, because it was so incredibly expensive to
do
it, and it was so incredibly labor-intensive. If a publisher approached me, I would... happily do a book.
Did you hear that, publishing world? But only if they gave you a big advance and you didn't have to be out of pocket on all that stuff, right?
Right. I mean, it was, even though it wasn't a large book, it was you have to buy all the flower product.
Right.
And if you do a photo shoot with 10 arrangements, you need different types of flowers for the different arrangements.
Right.
It's not like you can buy, you know, 10 bunches and, you know, whatever. So it gets very, very expensive.
Sure, I've been there.
I'm sure you have. People have often asked me, and I think that it would be a good thing to yes. do, but at this time, I just don't want to do it out of pocket again.
Right, right. Well, it might happen because you're open to it, and it's not the primary focus of your business. So right. it would be, yes, because every student who has studied with you would want to buy that book. Mm-hmm. So there is a market, and that's probably what will... it could perhaps inspire a photographer to financially commit to something that's going to be, you know, costly to produce and know that there's a built-in market. So
I have a photographer.
Is it the
yeah,
same one
yeah,
that you
Joni,
were
doing? Yeah, Joni, she definitely is interested in doing it. And Ted Mishima, who is the one who got me going on the headpieces
yes.
4.5 years ago, and he has been... It has been so, so, so much fun to work with him.
Oh, is he also in Portland?
He's in Portland,
okay.
yeah.
Okay, yeah. So maybe there are two books.
yeah, Woodland and a Botanical Couture or
yes.
something like that.
Well, that's for maybe when you're in your 70s or
yeah.
80s. you're traveling and it's great. So yeah. I love it. So what do you have between now and the end of the year? Anything in,
yeah.
that people can get in on?
It was... actually very exciting because I was contacted by the Garden Club in La Jolla and the Garden Club in Memphis,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to do a lecture at both in November.
Great. That's so, great. Lecture only.
Lecture only in La Jolla and in Memphis, a lecture and a workshop, a class.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're kind of getting, and that's the world I'm in. So you're kind of crossing over into horticulture and botanical gardens
mm-hmm.
and art museums
mm-hmm.
and that. That's a different niche,
right.
which is just as hungry
right.
to learn from you.
Yeah.
That will be great.
And another niche that I tapped in this year, I was invited by the a wholesaler in Vermont, in Burlington, to teach 3 workshops there. And then in in March next year, Mayesh invited me to come and teach a botanical couture in Orange County.
Oh, wow.
So that's another group.
Right.
Of, you know, potential, where potentially I can teach workshops besides studio in studios.
You're basically being hosted by a flower wholesaler who wants to introduce you to their customers.
Right.
Yay!
Yeah, it's fantastic.
That's why there's not just 6 varieties of flowers anymore. Okay, well, Françoise, I adore this. And do you want to sit down? I'm
no,
sitting
I'm
and
good.
I'm making you stand.
And I also wanted to mention that it has been such a fantastic joy in the last 2 years that so many small flower farmers have become part of this whole industry, who grow so many different types of flowers and textures than we were used to get from the wholesalers. And Elizabeth Bryant and I have become really, really good friends. And it has just been so incredibly cool to get these real treasures.
Absolutely.
Or to ask, you know, could you grow this? Or you know, she'll grow something and she'll say, I have something for you and I know you're going to love it. You know, and it's just always quirky and different.
That's,
so.
And that's... that reciprocity is so exciting. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's almost like this journey that we've been on trying to promote American flower
mm-hmm.
farmers. We have sort of different motivations.
Mm-hmm.
I want to sort of, I guess, preserve this agricultural heritage and encourage people to buy American.
Mm-hmm.
You're coming at it as an artist and saying, I want a diverse palette and
mm-hmm.
I want to...
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're supporting the farmer in a completely different way, but by expressing what they grow as
mm-hmm.
art, and
mm-hmm.
that's got to be
mm-hmm.
What's is stimulating them to want to do more for you,
mm-hmm.
and then also then farmers in other markets see it, and
mm-hmm.
now they're encouraged as well
mm-hmm.
because you're proselytizing everywhere in a good way.
You know, it's interesting because one of the growers at the flower market is from Holland, and he always had, you know, these wonderful things. And oftentimes, the next year, he wouldn't have it anymore. And I'd say, you know, Jack, where are the Peruvian Scylla, or where is this?
Right.
And he'd say, you know, Françoise, you were one of the very few who bought them. And so I plowed over that part of the field.
Oh, no.
And I could never understand why so many florists were not interested in trying something new. And so I asked him that one time, and he said, well, they just say, I don't know how long it's going to last, and I don't know how to use it. And I said to him, why would a flower farmer grow flowers that don't have a good vase life?
Right, right. And, really good point.
And why are some designers not interested in trying something
new? And why wouldn't you just trial it and just see?
And all you have to do is buy a bunch and see how it works in your design work.
But
and
that's so, fear, Francoise, isn't it? They're afraid of losing $50 on a bunch, a experimental bunch of flowers. And you're the opposite in that you're insatiably curious about that Peruvian lily or that, the Fritillaria.
Fritillaria. That,
her heart goes pitter-patter. Thanks so much for... finally, we got together. Yeah. I've been trying to podcast interview you on my last two trips to Portland. And now what happens is if you email Francoise and say, I'm going to be in Portland, she's probably going to say, I'll be in Mexico City, or sorry, I'll be in England. So we had to meet in Detroit, even though we only live 180 miles from each other.
Thank you so much, Deborah.
Oh, my gosh.
Thank you.
Oh, I just... I'm so inspired by watching your career. And you know, I remember when New York Times did a big profile about Ina Garten, the Barefoot Contessa cookbook author. Her first book was published at age 61. And she has an empire now of cookbooks. So, I mean, that's just one niche. Obviously, she's on TV and, all kinds of other things. But when I read that, I thought, wow, you don't have to... feel like your 20s and 30s are the only time to do something big and bold. Mm-hmm. So I think that's exactly what you're experiencing, and your students are too. So it's pretty great.
Thank you.
So let's switch over to Susan McCleary, one of your students who is now, she's been working, and now she's putting little cherry tomatoes in with the amaranth and the snowberry and a little bit of a succulent. Beautiful. And is that going to be a boutonniere?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh, Susan. Can you talk while you're working?
Yes.
Okay. She's got a wedding pickup here in a few minutes. So I've interviewed you a little bit over yesterday with one of your flower farmers. But, yes. Susan, how did you transition into floral? Because I know you had an extensive jewelry background, right?
Well, jewelry was a hobby.
Oh, it was. Okay.
I was in college and studying physiology, thinking maybe I wanted to be kind of a physical therapist / yoga teacher or something like this.
And was that here in Michigan?
Yes, in Ann Arbor.
Okay.
And I made jewelry for a boutique and for friends. And one friend was getting married and asked me to make jewelry for her and her bridesmaids. And then
was it wire or beads or what was
both.
Your motif? Okay.
Yeah, wire and pearls.
Oh, wow.
Pretty much. One night she confessed she hadn't hired a florist and her wedding was a month away maybe. And she said, "You're crafty. You could probably handle that." And I said, "Okay."
And were you in your early 20s?
No, I went to college later.
Okay.
I did everything kind of slow and deliberate. It's kind of
my
method.
I love that. Oh my God.
I did her wedding, and really when I had her flowers in my hands, I knew this is what I'm supposed to do. And I'm so happy she asked me because it's really what I'm supposed to be doing.
Right.
I know that now.
It's just, was it just like a physical, like a visceral physical reaction?
I had a smile, a permanent smile on my face the whole time, and I thought, I haven't felt this way in a really long time, and I've always been creative, but I didn't really know how to express it. Mm-hmm. So, very fortunate that happened to me.
Oh, wow, I love it. And so, were you able to start a floral business right then and there, or did it kind of evolve over time?
Yeah, like I said, I do things slowly. So, I did all my friends' weddings, and I didn't charge them labor, and I just gave that as a gift, and they bought the flowers, and I experimented, and I did about 10 friends. Then I thought, well, I need some training, so I pretty much absorbed all the training I could find locally, read every book I could find. Followed people like Francoise and was inspired by their work and just continued to learn finally getting a job at a wedding and event florist. Worked there for a few years.
All in Ann Arbor?
This one was in Northville.
Okay. Is that another nearby town?
Yes. Yep. And
so you kind of did the grind of cranking out a million weddings a year.
I did funerals. I did dailies. I did everything. Yeah.
It was good. It was like really like your graduate school.
Yes.
Yep. And look at now she's just taking the little tiny florets of hydrangea, and I don't know, are you gonna wire those?
I might glue them into the boutonniere.
Oh, I see, because there's just a little touch but not a lot of stem to work with.
Right.
Oh, scrumptious. And so, when did Passion Flower start?
2010.
Okay.
I had kind of absorbed everything I could at my current job. And
was your aesthetic a little bit different than that shop or that company?
Yeah, they were very generous, but I just kind of felt a little stifled.
Uh-huh, sure. So you were working for this big wedding and event floral business, and what prompted you to kind of go out on your own?
I felt like I had kind of absorbed everything I could at that current job and wanted to express myself. Mm-hmm. And with lots of encouragement from family and a little spot in my husband's wine warehouse that wasn't being used, I got the push to start.
Uh-huh.
And I was very scared.
Yeah. Kind of like that's why you and Francoise have sort of this thank God for friends and family who kind of nudge you along,
that's
right?
That's right.
Neat.
Yeah.
And so you thought you were also going to do weddings and events?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, weddings. I did 99% weddings the first 4 years, really.
And then did you, so that was in 2010. Mm-hmm. And so you were you already kind of well-known enough that you could market yourself, or how did you kind of get on the marketplace?
I did the same as Francoise did. I reached out to planners. I invited them to coffee and started to collaborate with planners. And then from the clients they gave me, I started to get referrals.
Sure, because then you're getting a body of work that you can put on your website.
That's right.
And that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have those early weddings from your girlfriends in your portfolio, or had you moved so far beyond that you kind of grew?
I think I did. Yeah, I think I did.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
I don't really want to revisit them now.
No, thank goodness we all kind of get better at what we do over time.
Oh, that's for sure.
Yeah. When did you get sort of your current reputation as this floral jewelry artist, which is sort of a nice combination of your worlds?
Yeah, goodness. I think it was only a year and a half ago that I was in California at a conference, a floral conference, and I took a workshop with Francoise, and after that...
And is that when you guys met?
No, I had actually won a spot at one of her workshops through Botanical Brouhaha.
Oh, wow.
And I went to visit her.
Was that in Portland?
Mm-hmm. Okay. 2013.
Okay, wow.
October.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
So it's been 2 years since I've known Francoise. And when I won that, I burst into tears because I knew this is my chance to really absorb some really
amazing,
inspiring, and technical.
Well, that's a really good point, Susan. Mm-hmm. It's the art and the technical that Francoise is really focused on helping people learn.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Oh, how exciting. Yeah. So that was kind of a turning point for you then.
It was. I started experimenting more, and I brought out my jewelry case again and all my jewelry tools, and it just kind of came full circle.
How exciting.
Yeah.
Was that the botanical couture class?
It was the wedding workshop.
Yes.
That you came to.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But you were doing some jewelry and had pieces.
I showed, I can't remember, probably how to do a ring and... Mm-hmm. I can't really remember.
Yeah.
But enough connection with jewelry that your juices got stimulated.
Right. And then a few months later, I went to the workshop in Santa Barbara, the Floor Abundance Design Days, and Francoise was a teacher, and Holly Chapel, and so on. After the class with Francoise, a number of students and I were making little jewelry pieces, just playing with the leftover bits. And the photographers covering the conference saw what I made, and they said, "Would you send us some jewelry?"
Wow.
For a photo shoot we're doing next week, and I had to fly back to Michigan. So I said yes, but I had to figure out how to ship back to California.
Sure.
And I thought, well, what will look good and survive the trip and look beautiful for the photo shoot?
and I started playing with succulents. And then the reaction on social media to that, the succulent jewelry was so dramatic. I knew I had something that people were interested in.
Wow.
So I started expanding that part of my business.
Oh my gosh. How funny that you were just trying to be practical and think what will ship and not shatter, like maybe something with a hydrangea petal in it. At the same time, succulents are becoming outrageously popular in home gardening and in landscaping, and the partly, and from my observation, is connected to the low water drought issues on the West Coast and maybe other markets. So you have more material to work with too, right? More interesting succulents, perhaps, than maybe back in the late 70s, where a jade plant was the only option.
Yeah.
Susan, when I interviewed you for the article for the Field to Vase website, you described your wonderful relationship with a nursery here that is growing most of your succulents. Do you want to talk about that?
Yes. I buy from Gray's Greenhouse. They're a family-owned greenhouse about 20 miles from my home, and they just have a large selection of really unusual, lovingly cared for, beautiful plants and foliages, and I buy from them as often as I can, and then I take them home and I try to keep them going. And
so you're just snipping off of these plants and then keeping them
going summer and fall. And I think I'll bring in some grow lights this winter and try to do a little better job over the winter.
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the reasons that I would imagine is that people are trying to buy jewelry from you year-round, right?
Yes.
So you've got to have a supply of succulents and other elements.
Yes.
And do you have a different name for that business? When we talked about your Etsy site, I was trying to find you on that.
Yeah, Etsy's funny. There was already a passion flower.
Okay.
So I chose Passion Flower Made.
Okay.
And with Etsy, it all has to be one word.
Okay.
So it's Passion Flower Made, one word.
And so that people can order jewelry from you there.
Yes.
And how are you keeping up with the orders? I mean,
it's been great.
Oh, good.
They've really kind of trickled in at good times when I'm able to do it easily. And people order with enough notice that I can plan. And
is it usually for wedding parties?
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. So you've got rings and necklaces and cuffs,
bracelets.
Right? Yeah. That's wonderful. And the headpieces, are they part of that too?
I'm adding crowns. I've done a few crowns. I'm adding crowns and boutonnieres to the site this winter.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Oh, that'd be great. Oh, please let me know when that goes up. And well, we'll share some photos and get people excited about it.
Thank you.
Okay. And so you're teaching as well. And had you been teaching before you met Françoise, or is it sort of a natural progression of just people being attracted to what you're doing and wanting to learn from you?
Yeah, that's kind of how it happened. I kept getting these messages on Facebook from florists saying, how did you make that cuff? And how did you do your headpiece? And how do you do a loose cascade bouquet? So these kept pouring in, and I thought, well, there's something there. And I love teaching and sharing knowledge, because when I was learning, I really did a lot of that on my own, and it was hard. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to price things. I didn't know how to make things. So it feels really good to be able to share.
You made that comment yesterday when we talked about finding flower farmers and sharing those sources. But it seems like your philosophy is very much, you know, I'll share my knowledge, and even, I guess, with a perceived competitor. I mean, that's just...
Yeah. I really think if you share freely, more inspiration has room to come in.
Mm.
And I just feel that way. And Françoise and I are kindred spirits in that. You know, people might look at my work and say, she's just kind of doing what Françoise is doing. And Françoise would never say that to me.
Mm-hmm.
She shares, she puts it out in the world, and she loves to see it come back and see it interpreted by your students. And I feel the same way.
Right. It's funny you say that, because I do think there are a lot of people who are then taking what they learned from Françoise and trying to push themselves to, you know, get better at the technique or better what they're doing. But you don't take it as copying at all.
No. I actually, the workshops are about teaching mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned earlier, I'm not very good at being creative when people are watching.
Okay.
So I make pieces during my prep day. so they can I can show a finished product.
Okay.
But then what the workshops really are about is the mechanics, because if you don't have good mechanics, you're in trouble. Mm-hmm.
And so then you're really equipping the student with those mechanics. Right. Yeah.
Because there are very, very, very few books, if any books, that that really show mechanics.
Mm-hmm. Of like the infrastructure of a bouquet.
Exactly, the infrastructure of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to figure it out all myself, because like what Sue said, there really wasn't much out there where people were interested in sharing. I think it's slowly but surely changing, but I had to figure out everything on my own, whether it was pricing or how do you do this or how do you do that. And because I am very curious when I see things, I wonder, I wonder how you do this, and then try to figure out the mechanics. And that's the information that I share in the workshops.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it sounds like, Susan, you're going to start teaching some jewelry. Are you already teaching jewelry workshops?
I am. I've been teaching one-on-one.
Okay, that's what you said yesterday.
Intensive kind of sessions.
So people will come want to have just a personal session with you.
Right.
Okay.
And that people approached me about that too. I didn't look for it, so I'm really happy that happened.
And they're willing to come out to Ann Arbor to meet with you.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
So what is this thing the two of you are cooking up for teaching at a flower farm? Let's end with that. Or can you say yet?
Yeah,
I think so.
That's no secret.
So
we're spreading the word a year ahead.
I was gonna say it's probably still being developed, but let's tease people with it.
Yeah, so we both feel most inspired when we're choosing these unusual, interesting materials, and flower farms are just rich with interesting textures and things that you can't find that easily. So it's the natural fit to teach a workshop on a farm.
Yes, I agree.
And we both love Amanda from Cornman Farm, who was our featured farmer last night, one of them. And she has a beautiful property with fields we can walk through and pick. Her farm is owned by Zingerman's, and they have a wonderful catering department, so we can have a lovely lunch. And
they have like a barn facility,
they
right?
They have a beautiful barn where we can set up and hold the workshop. And we would like to teach large-scale design. Francoise mentioned to me that she's been wanting to teach large installations. So
that's perfect.
Yeah.
And you need a wild open space to do that in, right? You can't be in a little...
Yeah, I can't do that in studio. My studio.
No. It's an outdoor workshop. Mm-hmm. So have you thought about when you'll do that?
October of next year.
Okay, great. Well, to be continued, if people want to get on your mailing list, they can go onto either one of your websites and sign up. So that's probably how you'll email out a newsletter or something to announce it, or social media.
Yeah, I posted on my website, so when we'll have the details nailed down. Post it on my website. I usually blog about it and post on social media, Instagram and Facebook. And then it's like for the workshop here in Detroit, we both posted.
Okay.
And we shared each other's information just to try to reach the largest group of people.
Cross-pollinate. Yeah, that's exciting.
That's the perfect word for it.
I think that, what I saw done at the Flower House in some ways is... involved a lot of mechanics from each designer, and you two collaborated on the kitchen. And let's just briefly talk about that, and then we'll wrap up because we're already over an hour. But we'll edit this down. The idea of doing a room together at the Flower House, was that before you decided to bring Francoise out to teach, or did they all kind of come together?
I already knew I would host her again in October, and we were going to host the workshop in Ann Arbor again at my studio. But then when the Flower House project came into being, I knew it would be more interesting to bring this workshop downtown. It was on the Monday and Tuesday before Flower House, and the designing at Flower House started Wednesday for us, so it made sense to be down here and just have this whole week of wonderful floral.
Right. And people were coming into town to work on the Flower House, and some of them would probably wouldn't have had a chance to learn with Francoise otherwise, right?
That's right. And a lot of the students decided to stay on and volunteer at Flower House. So it's been a wonderful week.
An orgy of flowers. It's so
exactly.
cool. So the two of you worked in the kitchen, and I got to go through it this morning. And
it really was Susan's project.
Oh, I knew she was going to say that.
It really was Susan's project.
Well,
because,
but,
you know, I only was able to help for a few hours on Wednesday because I had to go to Birmingham to teach two classes there. It was Sue's concept.
It really was. Well, that's true. We will give her credit.
She gets the credit on this one.
But it's nice that you wouldn't let Francoise sneak out of town without doing a little bit of, I don't know, veggie placement in the kitchen.
I think she laid down the foundation of the big structure.
Okay, yeah. And that's the one that was against, not the wall where the cupboard is, but the other side, right? Okay. I was looking at that this morning and thinking, was there a piece of furniture there? Was there a table?
Well,
the original design was going to have a chair that people could sit in, and it would kind of envelop them and hang over their heads, but the chair is completely gone. It's under there, but you can't see it
at all. It's just a veggie tapestry now.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
It's still
that's
life
great.
Gone wild.
Well, it's wonderful to see you guys work together and play off of each other and both have your own distinct personalities as designers and teachers. And it's just, I think, something that should be emulated. I think, you know, if we can look for inspiration from people we admire, it kind of ups our own game.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the Flower House was very much like that, that everybody was pushing themselves, not to compete, but to just, out of respect for the whole project. And you guys do that with each other, so it's really, really lovely to watch.
Thank you. Thank you.
Anything else I didn't ask you that you want me to make sure we get on the podcast? How long are you going to sleep tonight?
We're teaching together at Floor Abundance. I don't know if that's appropriate for you to
mention. Oh, yeah, let's mention that. So that's in
January.
Okay. So Yost is having Floor Abundance design days again. Mm-hmm. And is it like a three-day conference?
It's a three-day conference. And he had invited me to come, and then he called me one day, and he asked me if I would, you know, how about if you and Susan taught together, and I said, sure.
Oh, that's great.
So we'll be teaching botanical couture.
Oh, how fun.
And she'll show, you know, her mechanics and what she does, and I'll show, you know, how I do things. So the students will get two set of ideas on how to go about doing it, and then they'll probably come up with their own ideas.
But they'll get to actually make something that
right.
day.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, it's all hands-on there.
Oh, that's wonderful. And often those are a mix of floral enthusiasts and professional florists as well.
That's right.
Wow. So that's the teacher in you, you know, coming through to, because you have to get meet people at every level that they're at, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this has been awesome, and I adore you both. I'm really glad I got to spend more time getting to know you, Susan, and getting time to sit with Francoise for more than 15 minutes. This has been really great. So thank you both for chatting today.
Thank you. It's so wonderful to have you this week.
Susan calls Francoise a kindred spirit, which is such a lovely way to view how the Slow Flowers movement is bringing together many like-minded flower farmers and florists. We are kindred spirits, and the more we share and give, the more we can stimulate a new normal in this profession. I'm so grateful that these two women share their stories with you today. Episodes of the Slow Flowers podcast have been downloaded nearly 69,000 times, and I thank you and others in the progressive American grown floral community for supporting this endeavor. Until next week, you're invited to join me in putting more American grown flowers on the table, one vase at a time. And if you like what you hear, please consider logging onto iTunes and posting a listener review. Thank you to each and every one of you for downloading, listening, commenting, and sharing. It means so much. The content and opinions expressed here are either mine alone or those of my guests alone, independent of any podcast sponsor or other person, company, or organization. The Slow Flowers podcast is engineered and edited by Andrew Wheatley and Hannah Holtgertz. Learn more about their work at shellandtree.com.